All right, thank you everyone for allowing us an opportunity to review the desk packet that we received. I think we had some questions that you're probably anticipating based on that. So Commissioner Kaye, did you have a question?
I do have a couple, and these relate to exhibit number 122 received today from Carr, Tuttle, and Campbell, signed by Mr. Huff.
Can we put it up on the screen too, please?
I don't have a scanned copy of that.
Okay.
I just received it.
Okay, well,
scan it.
The first question I have is that, and this I think is for Director Tovar, which is that there are rules in state law and otherwise about when we can amend elements of a comprehensive plan. And the letter states that the one exception to the sort of annual, needing to follow an annual docketing process where all changes to the comprehensive plan are handled at once, is the initial adoption of a subarea plan. Of course, the council already adopted a subarea plan for this site earlier. So this is an amendment to that, and we up here are not the legal experts. We would like to hear from you and or the city attorney sort of the merits of this a bit. Are we, by amending a subarea plan outside of a normal annual docketing process, is this appropriate? Are there exceptions that we're sort of leaning on? Or
well, I had it up and
yeah, no,
it's gone away.
No, it was there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. See the word emergency that popped up right there? This is section 130. This is section RCW 3670A130 that talks about comprehensive planning process. And the Commissioner Kaye makes the point that what it says is if you're adopting a subarea plan, you may do so once a year outside of the normal annual cycle. We already have a subarea plan here that's been adopted for the first time, so we cannot use that provision. However, the word emergency appears in the section I just highlighted for you here, which basically says, at the city's sole discretion, it may declare an emergency and amend its plan at any time. So if you make a recommendation onto the city council, we will draft the adopting ordinance to say, council finds this is an emergency. Now, what constitutes an emergency is the council's sole discretion. No court is going to intrude on that decision as to what is or is not an emergency. We think there's some urgency here. We think it's important for the city to clarify what we think is appropriate for this road segment. We think it's appropriate to do it sooner rather than later.
Thank you.
And speaking of council, I would like to welcome Councilmember McConnell, who's joined us very early in the evening and have not been recognized yet.
Follow-up questions?
More on that one? I think this one's ripe with opportunity for questions since it makes a number of comments that are challenges to the current discussion we've had. Commissioner Behrens?
I'm following basically what you're saying here and what Yanni raised too. Are there other elements in this letter that you would feel comfortable commenting on? The one that concerns the fact that the road has been previously considered a collateral arterial, and we're changing it.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to allow you an opportunity to read through this and make any comments that you feel would be appropriate for us to hear.
I could make one general comment, and then if the city attorney wants to add specific comments, I'll give him a, I'll talk slowly so he can. Generally speaking, the city's comprehensive plan is adopted at the by the city council. They have the authority to adopt and amend the comprehensive plan. They have the authority for it to say what they want it to say, constrained only by the requirements of state law. Some of the assertions that are made in this letter contend that there would be inconsistencies, contend that good practice was not followed, would allege these would be a violation of the Growth Management Act. I see nothing in this letter that I agree with among those contentions. If this does move on and the council then were to adopt it, the recourse for somebody disagreeing with that would be to file an appeal to the Growth Mansion Hearings Board, make the case that the city either made a procedural error or there's an inconsistency between the two. Worst case scenario would be that the Growth Board would rule in favor of such an allegation, remand it back to the city. In the case of inconsistencies, then what the Growth Board would say is you have an inconsistency between A and B, but they wouldn't tell us which one to fix. They would say make it inconsistent, and that would be our choice as to how to do that. So I don't believe there's an inconsistency. I don't believe we have exposure or liability. If you were to recommend this and the council were to adopt it, and if it were to be appealed, we would defend it. And if we were not to prevail, we would do on remand what the Growth Board tells us to do in the way of complying with the requirements of the act that they conclude, hypothetically, are not being complied with. So I don't think this gives me pause. I think it's appropriate to look at it. It's appropriate for you to consider it and ask these questions. I'd like to see if the city attorney wants to add anything to that, but that is my general sense of how these things would work.
I need to study the comments a little more. I think there's a couple of themes. They're too concerned with this prerequisite for a reclassification to the arterial status. And it's they seem to be saying it's too rigid, too specific, a precondition. But I think the guarantees we're looking for is a study. And for instance, if at the time Point Wells is to develop, there is light rail or a commuter train station, that would then be taken into the study's account and reduce naturally the number of trips and produce a different result for mitigation projects needed in the corridor. So I don't think it's necessarily rigid. I think it's something that we expect to happen, to expect to be under our control and to be approved by us before we'll consider the reclassification action again. The rest I really don't take issue with or think they're a concern for passage of the proposed amendment.
Commissioner Kaye?
Yeah, I think one of the points raised here relate to the language in the proposed amendment, the whole unless and until a bit. And the issue raised there is that the city is asking the developer to pay for the entire cost of a study, even though there are already traffic inefficiencies and dysfunction along that corridor. But I think it's fairly normal when you have a development or some other change that kind of produce a major change. I think it's pretty common in my experience to do that. I do have some discomfort, though, and have some agreement with one thing that's stated here, which is the very last part of that clause, which says that as well as financial and legal guarantees that the necessary mitigations will be provided. The point they raise here is that this leaves it open that all mitigations for all dysfunctions on that corridor should be paid for by that developer, and I don't think that's appropriate. We have a lot of problems already on that corridor that would be exacerbated by a development of Point Wells. So, I think we could have some fairly minor change in language, again, not about the study, but about the mitigations to say that they're responsible for those that are commensurate with the impacts of that development. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't mm-hmm. seem reasonable to me to ask a developer to pay also for all the things that have gone wrong and fixing them in addition to the incremental changes that they produce. So I have some discomfort there. I wonder if you have a different opinion than I do on that, or...
I'm not so sure it's that unusual. I think, as I mentioned before, this is what typically happens with concurrency. Levels of service are getting worse with incremental development on a corridor, for instance, at an intersection, and somebody has to pay for that or they don't get to develop. I don't think it's illogical, or it actually just reflects reality, that who's going to create impacts. This neighborhood is really built out in Shoreline. It only serves this property owner and this sub area, and it is a single owner. So it is going to be that owner or Snohomish County to make its development possible would be the sources for the plan, and we assume the sources for the mitigation that has to be done.
If I can clarify, just to make sure you understand my question, the plan is much broader than just the impacts right leaving the site. And the transportation study we're asking for looks at things all the way from that site up to 99 and forward, and mm-hmm. could identify mitigations that might be needed for all the cumulative impacts of past and the proposed action on, say, the intersection at 99. Are we saying that we would want this developer to pay for all of those mitigations, like all of them, even everything that's just adding on to what's happening now? I'm just curious, is that the intent? Because that's how it reads, and that's what they're arguing, and I have some concern about that.
Okay, well, there are two kinds of arguments here. One is an equity argument. So is it fair? Is it reasonable? And people can differ on that. The other one is perhaps a legal argument. Do you have the legal authority to extract more out of this permit than you can demonstrate rational connection, nexus, and proportionality? We are aware of those legal constraints. We wouldn't be interested in breaking the law in that way, and we attempt to have them address the mitigations. But SEPA and its concurrency are two good analogies to look to here, which is basically you create the impact, you address the impact. If you break it, you fix it.
Commissioner Barnes?
One of the things that I thought was really helpful, and it's the reason I asked to have the minutes from the previous meetings that we had on this, I think the sub-area plan did a little better job. I'm not sure that this attorney isn't misstating himself. I think the sub-area plan required a study for the whole area and required a plan to correct deficiencies in the area. I'm not sure that the sub-area plan necessarily required the developer to pay for every improvement that was necessary in the corridor. I think that what the study looked to do was to proportionately require him to pay his portion. And alleviate some of the effects from this very large development. I don't think that there was ever an intent in the sub-area plan to say to the developer, you have to pay for everything, regardless of whether or not you did it or not. That's what he seems to be implying in the tone of his letter. And I'm not sure that's true. I think we were very clear on why we wanted the study and what we asked to be studied.
Can we scroll on the letter?
Well, I'm taking it out.
It's direct. 4 pages long, so.
Okay.
Do we have an extra copy of it that maybe we can pass around if people are?
I can make copies.
Just one.
How many?
2 or 3? 4?
Yes.
Commissioner Kais.
Let me two quick points, and then I'll stop at least for a little while. One thing I want to make clear to those who are here listening to this, we need to look to, and we do look to the city attorney and others to advise us. We are not here to determine the legal merits of the arguments posed in these letters. My interest and our interest is in just those factors that are specifically in the language of the proposed amendment. You know, we're not the ones who are going to try anything in court. However, this issue about financial and legal guarantees is in the proposed new language. That is why I'm asking that question. Just wanted to make sure I'm understanding what the city is proposing on that. So we're not here to have a trial. We're here to understand what the intent was and whether some additional language might be needed to clarify the proposed amendment.
I think what we'd like to do is to have you move on with other questions and answers, and we can try and compose some language that's responsive to an amendment you might want to offer. Mm-hmm. But we can craft something and let you take a look at it and see if that does the job.
The last one I wanted to ask, and this goes back to our discussion at the table, I think it was T14 of the traffic volumes and so forth. One thing I'm a little bit confused by, for these local streets, it does say that there's a it's phrased as less than 4,000 vehicles per day.
Steve, can we pull up that table?
Collector arterial, which is the current designation, the table says 3,000 to 9,000. vehicle trips per day. And I guess I'm a little confused. I know that the sub-area plan that you developed for Point Wells, or the city developed for Point Wells, and it went through this body and through the city council, spoke about a specific number of trips emanating from the site. But here we're talking about sort of the capacity of certain streets. Do any other collector arterials in the city have a specific max count on them? You're shaking your head, so that the answer to that is no. So if it, just this, as a hypothetical, if it were to stay a collector arterial, how could the, is there a way the city could use this range of values that's already identified for that type of street as a, to accomplish the same objective?
Well, possibly, except that we have explicit language in the plan that says 8250. And that's not proposed to be amended as part of this process.
It's already in there.
So if you wanted to propose changing that, you certainly could make that recommendation to council, I think, as a separate action from the action that is before you, which is this road segment.
I guess that's not my point. My point is that we're saying we want to change this to a local street in part because we really think an appropriate level at this point is it has to save less than 4,000 until we have a study to show what needs to be done and all that. But the definition of collector arterial also entertains things like 3,000 to 9,000. So does it have to be a redesignation of the street, or could it be simply defining a maximum volume as a collector arterial of 4,000? That seems to fit into the description of a collector arterial. I'm just trying to understand if there are other options here, what it adds to sort of the strength of the amendment to reclassify. I just want to understand that point.
You get that?
I'll try to take a crack at that. Table T14, the title of that table is called General Description of Classified Streets. So the information contained in the table, and it has across the top the different types of arterials all the way down to neighborhood collector local street, and then down the x-axis it has function, land access, speed limits, and other descriptors. And as you observed, on the volume descriptor, there are ranges, and almost each classification has some overlap with the one above it or below it. So I guess what I would emphasize is that there are also different descriptors and ranges with about pedestrians, about access, and so on. So these aren't hard and fast numbers to land on. What they are just trying to characterize the type of users and use of these different types of streets. So looking at the volume by itself is a piece of good information, but there are other factors to consider as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Esselman, any questions? Mr. Moss? Vice Chair Bukowski? Commissioner Behrens? If not, perhaps we could entertain a motion to get to the deliberation component. Director Tovar?
We have some potential language for you to consider if you're ready for that now.
Yep.
Maybe we could get a motion on the table and then talk about the language.
I'll go ahead and make the motion that we, and you're going to have to help me with the
recommend to City Council that we.
I'll make the motion that we make the recommendation to the City Council to reclassify Richmond Beach Drive between Northwest 199th and Northwest 205th as a local access street.
Utilizing the language that staff proposed.
Policy PW12 proposed staff language.
So that incorporating all of the proposed staff language as found on starting at the bottom of page 7 through page 8 of the packet?
Correct.
One second.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Moss, for making the motion and Commissioner Kaye for seconding it. Would you like to? That's always a tough one. How would you like to speak to your motion? or does it for purposes of discussion? Would you like to speak to your second? Go ahead.
All right, second it for purposes of discussion.
All okay. Right. Yeah.
Since I did open it for discussion, it does sound as though staff has made some recommendations, and I would be interested in hearing those recommendations.
Okay. Now we have it up in track changes, so everyone can follow along with.
Move it to the main paragraph. So I think to address some of the concern about specifically focusing on the owner's obligation to not only provide a study prior to development, but also to pay for all of the mitigation. And that's not a real concern as long as the money is there from some source for the city that complies with recommendations of that study. So we would recommend a change. If you look at the principal paragraph of the amendment and right after policy PW-9, substitute language would say, and financing for necessary mitigation is committed. That would allow it to be included through grants or part of the city's CIP program to partially fund that and to provide, you know, impacts directly related to whatever new development has a responsibility to the developer. So it doesn't really pinpoint the developer. It's just committed. We know it's going to be there and the project will be built. I think that's our concern.
I'm sorry, where's the
just
track? Where's the
PW9 in the actual wording? So maybe you can
didn't read it.
Right. Again, after PW9 and financing for necessary mitigation is committed, and then I guess you would go on to the city should not consider reclassifying.
So you're just replacing that phrase as well as financial and legal guarantees.
Taking out the connector of as well as connecting it to the owner from the beginning of that sentence.
Can we get that up in actual word?
That's a PDF
right
there.
Have to move.
That's the problem.
We're going to get the word doc up, and then we're going to get it on here. And then.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. I can see what is there.
Director Tovar?
One of the things I think that you discussed earlier is someone pointed out that the word access should be removed in describing local street. So we would suggest you have an amendment that removes the word access wherever it appears between the words local and street to be consistent with the table.
Mr. Chierpakowski, would you like to move that we do that?
Yes.
Would that be friendly? Can we just add that in? That's friendly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's friendly.
Good. Okay.
Thanks. Can we ask a question?
You can ask questions. You can comment. Who would you like to ask a question to?
It's kind of a staff question. I'm still kind of struggling with when I look at the last sentence. The last phrase, it's saying beyond those approved for the local street 4,000 and then or arterial classification. I'm just wondering, given that this proposal would reclassify this as a local street, why do we need the or phrase at the very end? Why can't it, what would be the problem, I guess, with just ending it at local access street? That given at this point in time, there should be no road improvements that would accommodate and encourage vehicle trips beyond those approved for a local street, period. Because in order to do beyond that would take a reclassification further, so another amendment.
You could simply say beyond the adopted threshold time. So if it's 4,000, that's what you can't exceed. If it's 8,250, that's what you couldn't exceed. You wouldn't have to make those numbers.
But that, that's a given, though. That's true.
Well, you could just strike a whole sentence.
Well, maybe, I'm just kind of wondering what the sentence itself is just a little awkward to me, and I'm just kind of struggling with that, and I don't know if it does anything.
If it really doesn't add any value or clarity, you could just drop it.
Yeah, what you did. Right after PW9, you did something.
Because we're essentially saying the sentence before that would say you should not consider reclassifying this road segment unless, you know, the lesson until, so then period, and then I'm kind of struggling with what the last sentence adds.
In retrospect, I'm not sure it adds a lot other than confusion.
So I would suggest we strike it.
Would you like to propose a
friendly? Is that your intention? Are you suggesting that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I can, well, I
that's why I wanted to hear the staff's response to that, though.
Steve, can you do that in track changes, though?
Pardon me?
Can you do that in track changes so we can see it in red?
Or at least highlighted or something.
Under the review tab at the top. Yeah,
thank you. So,
I work on computers way too often.
Undo what I do.
Everything. Just
mind, like Jedi mind trick to try and get you to do it. So since we're doing friendlies, I'll let maybe Steve catch up, but I'll throw out there that one of the things that struck me was that just to be precise and accurate, there was an indication from the Carr Tuttle letter that the street isn't, well, it is a dead end local access road, I guess. I was thinking that didn't need to be dead end local access, didn't need to be in there for clarity. And we've always talked about making things a little bit more succinct because even without that, the sentence stands on its own. And then it removes one additional, albeit potentially, hopefully minor concern, but using language that's non-inflammatory, if that's, would that be friendly?
So what are you proposing to change?
Just taking out the word dead-end local access. So then it would read, in view of the fact that the whatever street is a road with no opportunities for alternative access to dozens of homes.
Yeah. But isn't local, though, we are taking out access already, right?
Yeah.
And
so
it is
a local road.
It is a local road. That's what.
Yeah. But dead end, taking out dead end.
Is there, and I guess it is a dead end.
But it was, well, but it's not a dead end in the way that it's being described. And I know I'm splitting hairs, but the way it was articulated in the letter from the landowner at the other end is that it actually goes through Shoreline to other property, and it doesn't dead end with those residences, which is the way it is. It could be interpreted that the intention of the city is to imply that it is a dead end residential street currently, whereas it's not really a dead end residential street. It's a dead end street that also serves Point Wells. I know I'm splitting hairs. Okay. If it's not friendly, and fine. I just thought that it would be. I don't think it adds anything to take out the words dead end, and it causes someone else to perceive it to be more precise.
Okay.
No.
And Chair Wagner, you were saying that the road continues north from Point Wells?
No, into Point Wells.
Into Point Wells.
Right.
Okay.
It's being portrayed here. The argument could be made that it's being portrayed here as a dead-end residential street, where it's not really a dead-end residential street. It continues on in to serve Point Wells. That's, I think, the hair I'm trying to split.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, that the street does end in the Point Well at Point Wells.
Right, not at the residences.
Correct.
But I don't guess that Commissioner Kaye.
Friendly.
Yeah, you're good with that. Okay.
So, Commissioner Moss, did you consider that friendly or no?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I would consider that friendly. And
okay. Thank you. And then, Vice Chair Prokoski, we had struck that entire last sentence. Right?
Mm-hmm. That was my friendly, yeah.
And that was agreed to by Commissioner Moss and.
Yes, so I had already made that.
So starting where?
With intersections or other road improvements.
The last sentence.
The last three lines.
Got it, okay. Sometimes it's hard to tell where a sentence starts.
Yeah.
Commissioner Wagner. This is a question. I have the segment here where the road segment is an arterial with a capacity of 8,250 vehicle trips per day. kind of confuse two things here. The 8,250 trips comes from the sub-area plan. That's the maximum figure from sub-area plan.
Well, we're still in the sub-area plan here.
I got you. The 9,000, the arterial figure that we're talking about is not in relation to the sub-area plan. You'd be talking about two different things.
Right. There is the map, where we would change the designation to local street. But as Mr. McKinley pointed out, the table you've been looking at talks about a range. Mm-hmm. Here, PW12 would be saying for this particular local street, 4,000 is the significant number. It's not the range, it's that number.
What I was suggesting is that the city should, we could, I don't have a great discomfort with this, but I think that since we're talking about arterials and a capacity of a road, it is not necessarily the same as what the arterial is and was in the rest of the code. The city should not consider reclassifying this road segment with a capacity of 8,250 vehicle trips per day and drop as an arterial.
Because the naming of the road is...
As an arterial indicates something else in the code, which is got a, potentially could have a figure higher than the 8,200 figure. I mean, understand where the 8,200 figure comes from. The 8,200 figure comes from the sub-area plan.
If you take the words as an arterial out, don't do that yet, Steve. But if you were to do that, if you were to do that, I think this still works.
But would there, so as part of the question in the way Commissioner Kaye had asked it, though, I think with some of the indication that we have with like the lane striping and one or two lanes, and as Mr. McKinley had indicated, there may be, you know, one or two lanes versus potentially three. I think that there's some intrigue, there's some things I'm a little bit intrigued with about leaving it as a arterial, but ratcheting down the number because there are other options available versus if we leave it as local, then it actually limits us in other, it limits it in other ways, then we can't, then the improvements aren't as potentially as great. There wouldn't be bus opportunities, but I think that's the policy choice as to whether or not you'd want that flexibility. So the name might not seem as important, but I think if we're trying to make decisions about some of the things that fit in these boxes, unless staff can clarify that it doesn't really matter, but those are just guidelines. Commissioner Moss?
My question is, do we need to have the last part of that sentence period, that it could end with the city should not consider reclassifying this road segment
to anything?
And instead of getting into the details of what that road segment might be, or capacities or anything else, because, or do we need to make that link again here to the 8,250 vehicles per trip day, vehicle trips per day, because it's called out in the sub-area plan in another section? Is that
right? To be consistent with the other policy statements in the sub-area plan, we drafted this language to make clear to people that the designation now we're suggesting is 4,000 mm-hmm. local street. But at some point in the future, if the plan that's called for in PW9 is done, if the funding is committed, then the city should consider. Consider is an important word, too. Consider doesn't mean you will. It means you'll think about it. Mm-hmm. We will not even think about it without this information. But then we're trying to be candid with the public and the council and the commission that if that were to happen, the city potentially would at that point in the future say, we will accommodate 8,250 on this road segment along with the rest of the road segment. So we're not trying to hide the pea here. We're trying to say, we don't have the information, we don't have the study, we don't have the commitments, therefore 4,000 is the right number. If we have those things, the council could consider going to 8,250, which is the number that's in place right now.
And Commissioner Kaye.
I guess You just kind of triggered something for me, which is a bit of an inconsistency here. If we look a few paragraphs up on this page, where we talk about the city's, sorry, about three paragraphs up there. The city's traffic study completed in 2009 shows that if more than 8250 vehicle trips per day enter the city's road network from Point Wells, okay, that's Point Wells only. That's not the road capacity. The road already has 100 and something, according to the map you gave us, per day, right? So those are actually two different things. So it might make sense to not refer to 8250 as the road limit. You've got that as the limit of trips emanating from the site. That's a different thing. So from that perspective, I would agree with Commissioner Moss. Stop this, you know, end the sentence at
the city
should not consider reclassifying this road segment, period. The other language still stands in the summary plan, but it would just remove that
arguable inconsistency.
That's an extremely good catch.
We're adding a lot of friendly amendments to this. Is that still, you consider that?
That's certain, that's, yes. I think you were supporting my point, Commissioner Kaye, so thank you.
Shorter and shorter.
Yeah. We're meeting council goal of making it clear and concise.
In reference to the proposed staff language, you mentioned that the change in language to and financing for necessary mitigation is committed, and you said that could be from grants or could be a host of different things that we're not aware of right now. But when I read the sentence structure, the way that it's written, that's not how I would interpret that. I would still interpret that the way it's written there, that because it starts out unless and until either Snohomish County or the owner of Point Wells can provide. So that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And financing. So if you take out that and make it into a simple sentence, take out, you know, can provide to the city the transportation corridor study and mitigation plan called for in policy PW9. If you just take that out and condense that sentence to the intent of it, it still, to me, reads as though the expectation is that the financing would be the responsibility or the determination of the financing would be so
the property owner's responsibility.
Right.
You could make our meaning of separating those two clearer if you wanted to put in some numbers, like one, the owners in or Snohomish County provide the plan, and two, sources of financing for necessary mitigation
committed.
Are committed.
I think that would be clearer to anybody who's reading the proposal that's not sitting here privy to this conversation that we're having right now and what your comments were.
Right.
And again, if we want to be clear, I think we should be consistent, and bullets can certainly help with that.
The document needs to speak for itself for
correct
posterity.
Correct.
Sources of financing?
Yeah, the sources.
All right. Or financing.
Our committee.
Our committee.
Are we still friendly? I think we're still friendly.
Okay.
At some point, Robert's Rules of Order is going to come out and Jessica's.
Okay.
I think that clarifies it. It just breaks up in the way that I'm reading it that we're not holding them to be solely financially responsible.
We could do a vote that these are all friendly.
But it makes clear, as a matter of policy, that unless these things happen, the city should not consider changing
right,
the class.
Right, but we still need both those things. We need financing and we need that plan.
Right.
And the expectation is that Snohomish County or the developer will provide the transportation corridor study and mitigation plan called for. But the financing is another piece, but it's separate from them.
Right.
Commissioner Corley? Vice Chair Kukowski? Commissioner Barron?
I'm trying to locate PW9.
Can we scroll up? Is it on this page?
Fair or not. I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's in the subarea plan.
I don't think PW9 is in there.
Do you have the top plan there?
I just wanted to read to see exactly what it said about. I just thought it would be interesting to read PW9 to see exactly what it says about how the study is supposed to be constructed. Mm-hmm. Because it may have enough language in it that we don't need to add anything else to it. I don't seem to be able to find a copy of it.
We're going to pull it up on the screen here. It's fairly lengthy.
This is PW9A and B.
Those of you who were here for the crafting of it may recall.
I remember that.
A lot of work went into it.
I think you can find it easily on page 55 of the packet.
I hope you like it.
That's the minutes. The
minutes, yeah.
Has it from page 55, yeah. I think. So until they pull it up, at least we can.
It is, correct.
Is that the version that was approved?
It should be. It's not a problem. And I can quickly read it while people are looking at it. And Joe, I'm looking at the right one, right? 55 of the minutes from page 20 of the minutes.
Well, it may or may not have been the way the council adopted it.
Okay.
So let's wait for Jessica to pull up the adopted document so we don't get crosswise with what actually the plan says.
Teddy Wampus,
good point.
Scroll down a bit so we can get the language right above the policy statement so they can see the context. Okay.
I guess I would just comment. I don't think 9 says the same thing as the amendment in 12. So I think the amendment 12 should be considered on its merits. I don't think it's covered here. The study, it says, should identify needed investments and services, including design and financing. In other words, needed design and financing. That does not commit anyone to do it. It says the study just needs to figure out what it's going to cost. So I think the new proposed language under 12 is different and separate from this, so I think we should consider it on its merits.
Mm-hmm.
Vice Chair Kukowski?
Can we go back to the proposal?
Well, let's cross 12. Our fingers and see.
The more we stare at this, the more we end up seeing. But now I'm wondering if there's a wordsmith issue, just, and it's not a big deal, but you don't need the word either there necessarily. But then I'm wondering if the word or is correct. Snohomish County or the owner, couldn't be and or? I mean, what if they together? Would it be possible that we wouldn't want to eliminate the possibility that they would both
join
jointly or, you know, and so I'm just, is or unnecessarily limiting there?
And X, more flexibility.
And or.
Friendly?
Friendly.
Yeah, it's friendly. And that was a one-for-one word swap, so we're still... Does anyone want to talk about the specific merits of the, aside from the adjusting of the words, the build the record for what we've heard about the impact of the number 4,000 and where we think that leaves us?
Well, I could say that I think it more accurately depicts what the existing context and conditions are at this point in time. And I think that's what the development needs to respond to, is existing conditions.
And Commissioner Kay?
Yeah, I guess I'd say that this is a very unique site and unique circumstances, and I'll admit to some discomfort with the idea of simply, and again, I'll say this is a unique circumstance, but there are many cases where I would really question how we don't want to say no to things because they add traffic to certain streets. And so that whole issue is a difficult one. Now, at the same time, this classification won't do that, in the sense that changing it to local street could allow up to 4,000 vehicle trips per day, and that is a significant change for this particular segment of the street. But just in our communicating to the community and to the council, certainly my intent, if I choose to, and I'm leaning towards sort of approving or voting for this amendment, is not to say that I think it's appropriate or reasonable to expect that we can say no to changes simply because they add traffic to streets that maybe have been historically quiet. There are many streets and many communities that have had significant changes in their traffic patterns because of private developments, public developments, you name it. That being said, I think because of the very sort of odd circumstance at the site, and it really is a bottleneck section, I think this, this is a prudent thing to do until we have good enough information to make wiser decisions about possible capacity choices that are higher than this.
Thank you. Commissioner Behrens?
I just wanted to raise the reason why I wanted to look at point PW9 is I wanted to see how the study worked with this point. I wasn't trying to suggest that we eliminate 12 with 9. That wasn't my intention. It was to see how the study worked, how the two parts of this worked together. And there is a little bit of discomfort in saying that, in that the developer is, under PW9, required to provide the study. And if we put unless and until either Snohomish County or the owner, we're actually saying something that is contraindicated in number 9. Mm-hmm. Number 9 says the developer does it. We're saying either or in 12. So I'm not saying that is a major inconsistency, but it appears to be a bit of one.
If I may offer, I would.
Go ahead.
I think that the city would probably be fine if Snohomish County wanted to come up with a study. So I don't think, even if
they
might
be to pay for the study, I'm sure we would take their money.
But so that I don't think that causes just as a
not an element of concern.
Commissioner Moss?
In the, I guess it's the introductory paragraph. This is on page 8, about middle of the page, and it's right before policy PW11. And I believe that this is
go back to the call plan.
Is the language with the strike through and the proposed new language. and they talk about the level of service of F or worse at a number of city intersections, which would be an unacceptable impact. As we were discussing right now, the volume of traffic that is coming through there is pretty low. But again, even if they were to just to ramp up to a moderate use, still within their purview, if they haven't, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the language, but if they've not had a lapse of use, apparently, do we need to address the fact that if they just went back to a full capacity, that could have a negative enough impact on intersection failure? Do we know that
the traffic impact is probably not close to 8250, even if they went to full production? I think would be
right.
I mean, even if they went to an industrial use, it wouldn't be.
But let's say that it went to 1,000 right now, which is clearly with under 4,000 trips, under the limit that we're talking about for a local road, and it just went to 1,000 or say 3,000. Does that have the potential to have intersection failure? Maybe not in that particular stretch of the road, but is that something that, in the context of what we're looking at, we should be addressing?
Well, I'd like Kirk to add to this, but my sense is that the 8250 threshold is talking about vehicle trips, regardless of what those vehicles are. Whether it's vehicles coming from a revitalized, regenerated industrial use on the property, or a residential mixed use of some scale, doesn't really make a difference in terms of the functionality of the intersections and the levels of service. So I think, regardless of what the use is, until they get up to 8250, the policy that we've been looking at here would not really differentiate or care. Now, the time and the character of if it's a lot of trucks, as an example, there might be other issues we'd want to deal with through the SEPA process. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'll ask Kirk if he wants to add anything.
I think those.
Okay, I guess maybe I'm not. I guess maybe I didn't get my intent across. If we reclassify the road to be a local road with a maximum capacity of 4,000 trips. Mm-hmm. And that's done. But it doesn't even reach 4,000 trips. Are we going to have intersection failure with additional trips?
No.
Okay.
Correct.
And it wouldn't even, I think, to add on to that, not that I want to muddle the waters, but even if they stayed at an industrial use and went to 8251, because of the nature of the fact that those trips aren't going to likely be during commuter rush hour, it probably still wouldn't impact
the level of service.
The level of service, because those trips would be
long, yeah.
Largely off peak. Not that I'm suggesting that would be
okay.
More desirable.
And if I might add too, actually only portions of the intersections failed, and so if you have residential, you're going to have a big peak in the morning and in the evening. Whereas if you have an industrial use, it's going to be all day. So in fact. You won't see any kind of numbers that would make intersections fail.
Okay, thank you.
Especially if they're barges. We've had not a lot of discussion sort of for and against, so if anyone has anything that they'd like to throw out as last thoughts, as consideration of why they would or wouldn't support it, I think that would be a good time. Are you ready to? Vice Chair Pekoski, you were going to say something, or
no? Nope. Not really.
Ready to call the question? All those in favor of.
We're going to read it
as written.
would you like me to restate my motion?
Yeah.
Read it.
Okay. Would you like to restate your motion with all the friendlies as newly drafted and revised?
I'll restate my motion. following discussion of the Planning Commission, I recommend that we adopt policy PW 12. Oh, you moved my words. PW 12 that states, in view of the fact that Richmond Beach Drive between Northwest 199th Street and Northwest 205th Street is a local road with no opportunities for alternative access to dozens of homes in Shoreline and Woodway, the city designates this as a local street with a maximum capacity of 4,000 vehicle trips per day. Unless and until Snohomish County and or the owner of Point Wells Urban Center can provide to the city the transportation corridor study and mitigation plan called for in policy PW-9, and two, sources of financing for necessary mitigation are committed, the city should not consider reclassifying this road segment.
I still second it.
And that is for high clarity, additionally including the other proposed changes by staff that are in
the staff report.
The staff report with no additional modification to those. Just the
correct, yes.
Okay.
Thank you for stating that for me.
Just for high clarity. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstaining? Mr. Barnes, did you vote? Did I get
yes,
you?
Yes, not I.
Okay. I just didn't hear you and see. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Quick question. Maybe Steve can go back to the top of page 9. Have you dealt with the proposed revision to figure T18?
No. Mm-hmm. No, we have not.
You've been talking about the text, which is part of the amendment. The other part of it is changing figure T18 to show the segment of Richmond Beach Drive reclassified as a local street.
Take that as a second amendment, then.
Commissioner Kay.
Further move to amend the subarea plan as proposed by staff regarding the proposed revision to figure T18 street classification that implements the policy change and shows Richmond Beach Drive segment reclassified as a local street. Let's recommend we strike the word access to be consistent with the language we just discussed. Mm-hmm.
We have a second on that?
I'll second it.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Esselman.
And if we might clarify, it's actually not a change to the subway or planets. I know that because it's figure T something.
Oh,
it's a change,
right.
It's a change to the transportation element.
Right. Sorry, thank you.
Good catch.
I don't want to have any discussion.
No discussion.
That. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining? That passes as well. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and thank all of you for attending and your thoughtful comments that you provided. Next on our agenda, because we are not done, we have the director's report. Director Tovar.
Same as the director's comments.
Excellent. Unfinished business. New business. Reports of anything that you had to add, Jessica? No, nothing. No new business for us. No. Reports of committees and commissioners and announcements. Agenda for February 3rd.
February 3rd. There'll be a study session on development code amendment, which would permanently transfer all quasi-judicial hearings to the hearing examiner for both being the hearing body and the decision maker, and a study session on Aldercrest.
Okay, and is that Aldercrest current? Say that again.
So there's going to be a study on the Aldercrest comprehensive plan designation and zoning code, and Commissioner Kaye, will you be?
I will be recusing myself from participation in that hearing. Okay. I'll speak separately with Vic Tovar about whether I would attend the beginning of the meeting to hear other items and then leave, or if I will just simply take the night off.
Yeah, I'm guessing that just wild guess, that Alder Crest is going to have more people interested than the development code amendment, so it's very possible we'll do that first. So we'll talk about how we might handle that.
And that is a legislative action based on the fact that we're having a study session on it? Or shall I hold my questions for the study session?
The amendments began life at the direction of the City Council to put it on your planning work program. I construe that to mean these are legislative actions. The notice that we are giving and the way we are conducting ourselves substantively is as if it were a quasi-judicial process. So we're mailing notice within 500 feet, not simply putting a notice in the newspaper. Okay. So in an abundance of caution, you should conduct yourselves as though this is all quasi-judicial.
All right. Will we have a quasi-judicial checklist?
Well,
I'm just trying to think, we'll have to. I think it'd be important for us to make sure
how we need to actually handle ourselves.
Our advice is treat it as though it's quasi-judicial. Okay. Don't talk to anybody. Don't express opinions about it.
Duly noted.
Until you make motions.
Until you make a motion. Excellent. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Oh, well. Just a quick question.
Yes?
I just had a quick question with regard to the development code amendment that's going to be heard on February 3rd. One of the things that I thought that was required or requested by the Planning Commission is that we get feedback on what was going on in those. In other words, what was being put before them and some of the returns, so we could sort of have a feel for how that whole process was going. And to my knowledge, I haven't heard anything about anything that's gone through that process or anything. So I just, and I don't necessarily need an answer now, but I would certainly like one by next meeting.
Staff report for the amendments on the 3rd?
Yes.
And by, just make sure I understand you, you're saying what has happened under the quasi-judicial permit process?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was my understanding that we were supposed to get some feedback during that period.
The feedback is nothing has happened. She has conducted no hearings.
Oh.
So.
In a year or something?
Exactly.
We've had, I think, one hearing on a street vacation.
Which wouldn't have come here anyway.
And I believe that's it. We'll have to check it. But basically, nothing.
Have missed anything. Nothing's happened.
Okay. Well, that's the economy, I guess.
Right.
Okay. We're adjourned. Mm-hmm.